Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. What happens to those who are arrested under national security laws like Pota, Poka or Sosma after they have served their sentence? Are they afforded a second chance in society? Currently, Malaysia does not have a reintegration program for former security detainees to re-enter society after having served their sentence. And that exactly is the aim of Project Integrate, to develop a multi-stakeholder reintegration program for former security detainees in Malaysia. Joining me now is Aizat Shamsuddin. He's the founder of the nonprofit initiative to promote tolerance and prevent violence, better known as Initiate.my, which is spearheading this collaborative Project Integrate. Aizat, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm hoping we can begin our conversation today by, you know, right off the bat, telling us why there is a need for a reintegration program for former security detainees.
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much, Melissa, for having me. When we first started this project, the idea that we have in mind is really about engaging in the government's national action plan on preventing and countering violent extremism. So it's a national plan that is being developed by the Home Affairs Ministry specifically. So we would like to emphasize on the reintegration program of former security detainees, which is in the status quo, it's very lacking, it's still incomprehensive. So when we do our studies, discussions with former security detainees and also their family members, we found out that there are a lot of challenges and also needs, for them when they want to rejoin the society after the prison time or after the detention. So some of the needs or some of the challenges that they are facing, for example, social stigmas, towards security detainees. So it's a bit different than, former normal prisoners, because they have this label of, security detainees having this extreme or terrorist ideology that is a threat to the society. So it's hard for them to get employment, to pursue education, and most importantly is that the mental health aspect of these some of these former detainees. For example, they have spent some time in Iraq and Syria. They face conflict, affected or trauma, and also like trauma from the prison facilities itself, such as like torture or any sort of like psychological pressures.
Right. So those are the challenges that they face. I want to go into who they are and specific challenges and what the reintegration program, how the reintegration program might help. But I would like you to address some of the, I guess, wider societal concerns about, there are those, Aizat, who argue that actually, former security detainees, they don't deserve a second chance. They have radical extremist ideology. There are those who say, lock them up and throw the key away. How do you make the argument that they do deserve a second chance?
Yeah. So one of the slogan that we have in our Integrate program is to give a second chance. So everybody deserves a second chance. So we understand that, the stigma from the society that, security detainees, they have this baggage where, they used to join, radical groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda, for example. So they don't deserve a second chance. So, for us, we think that's a national issue. That's definitely something that we need to care about. But at the same time, we need proper reintegration program so that we can address the risk of these people from being to re-employ these people, to leave again. It would increase the risk of them, of being radicalized, because a lot of these radical groups are trying to take advantage of their vulnerability, you know, trying to recruit them to rejoin the group. So with proper integration program, as well as what we also emphasize is the education, inclusive education, for them to understand the diversity of Malaysian society is also important. Something that I want to emphasize, like as this is a collaborative project with other civil society in other countries, we look at Indonesia as a good example. So they have the government is giving grants for former detainees, former combatants to do a small businesses that benefit the society, and also a education program you know, for them to be friends with the victims of terrorism, or to such as interfaith program, you know, for them to disengage with this from this radical ideology. So these are some of the models that we think are important when it comes to reintegration program.
Isaac, so why is it that Malaysia doesn't have a reintegration program?
It does not mean that we don't have a reintegration program, right? We do have, but it's scattered. The government agencies do not communicate with each other when it comes to, you know, helping former security detainees. But I think it's very systematic somehow when it comes to security issues in Malaysia. It's very state-centric. You know, the obligation to address security issues only falls, you know, on the shoulders of the government sectors, police, enforcement agencies, but not really, there's a lack of a collaboration or partnership with the civil society, right? So we see this happened in other countries as well, but it's because of the NAP, the National Action Plan, the objective is really about to democratize the role of security, of preventing violent extremism. So I think that monopolization of security by the government is really, you know, triggering, you know, this
right
lack of.
Well, I can understand why perhaps there is a hesitance to include this kind of multi-stakeholder approach, because again, you know, it feels like the government may need to be very territorial about national security issues. Why is it important, though, that CSOs have a seat at the table to help guide the National Action Plan, or to even provide input in a reintegration program project?
Even in security issues, you know, the process should be more democratic. The participation of civil society is vital, you know, to provide a third opinion, more independent opinion. But the most important thing is that when we have discussion with former security detainees, what we have gotten is that there is still this affection, you know, or distrust among these former security detainees towards the state. So there's a lack of trust even, you know, among these people. So the best actor to become the bridge between the government and also these vulnerable communities is civil society. And this is proven in other countries that you need civil society to be part of this effort.
Yeah. Also, I'm guessing this might also have some degree of transparency. You know, civil society might help guide, you know, monitor and hold to account government's actions when it comes to dealing with national security laws and security detainees. Let's come back to, you mentioned, you know, you work a lot with former security detainees. Who are they, Izzat? Who are those who have been detained under these national security laws, and how have they managed to reintegrate into society, even without a comprehensive reintegration program?
So normally, when we talk about former security detainees, they are people who have been charged under some of these security laws that you mentioned at the beginning. And some of them have spent some time or prison time or detention time because of their action. So for example, some of the offenses like, you know, possession of terrorist related materials, you know, being part of ISIS groups.
Are they very young? Are they young people when they rejoin society? Do they still have, you know, like their whole lives ahead of them?
Yes, I mean, most of these former detainees that we, you know, from our discussions, the demographics are, you know, about 25 till 40 years old. So they are pretty youth at their age. So still young and still, you know, trying to, you know, think about their future ahead of them. So when they serve these sentences, you know, what happened is that they have their career is over. Some of them used to be a businessman, some of them used to be an engineer. So when we talk about this kind of offenses, most of them are pretty much, you know, educated when it comes to the education level. So
are there women former security detainees? What issues or challenges are unique or specific to women security detainees?
Yeah, so yes, we have female former security detainees, but it's a very minority of them, and when it comes to gender, so we sense that most of these people are from the families of former security detainees, which means that they are wives and they are daughters to ISIS fighters or to their dads, who you know, former security detainees. So issues that are unique to women, I think, for example, how, you know, radicalization of women as recruiters, and also the prevalence of domestic violence or SGBV, sexual based violence, you know, against them. But the role of women has become unique over the years. I think lots of these radical movements, they try to recruit more women because they think that the role of women is significant to recruit other women, you know, into the organization. So you see, after ISIS, I think 2011, about that, you see more women participants, you know, in this kind of movement.
Right. So Project Integrate is multi-stakeholder, as you said, right? So we talked a little bit about the government's role and civil society's role, but what about other stakeholders? What can the public do? What can businesses, the private sector, all of that, I think, a whole of society approach. What is it that everyone watching here tonight should understand about giving a second chance to a former security detainee?
Yeah, so I think, of course, it's multi-stakeholder approach is very important, especially when we talk about employment opportunities, corporate sector should play a big role and should try to understand this issue. So that's why we are organizing right now discussions and consultations with corporate sectors, just to enlighten them about the issue, and you know, most of them, of course, they have reservation when it comes to recruiting or hiring former security detainees, not former prisoners, you know, normal detainees, mm-hmm. You know, just because of the security label. So what we offering to these corporate sector is that guidelines or SOPs that we can develop together to address this concern, such as you know, early warnings or specialized training for their human resource in order to address any concerns when they hire security detainees. But also, like, I think the public should also you know, play a role when it comes to welcoming these people into back into the society. Do not seclude them any further, do not stigmatize them any further. Like I mentioned just now, it would just increase the susceptibility or vulnerability of these people to be re-radicalized, and it's very important to have this multi-perspective approach or more inclusive approach, community activities that include these people.
Isaac, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Appreciate your time. Isaac Shamsuddin from Initiate.my. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about Project Integrate, which aims to equip Malaysia with a comprehensive multi-stakeholder reintegration program for former security detainees to re-enter society after being released from detention. My next guest is Dr. Mukris Matrus. He is a senior lecturer at University Utara Malaysia School of Law, Government and International Studies. Dr. Mukris, thank you so much for joining me on the show. In my earlier conversation with Isaac Shamsuddin from Initiate.my, he mentioned that, you know, some of the former security detainees are relatively young, they have their whole lives ahead of them, and yet they have trouble shaking off this label, this stigma of being a former security detainee. I was wondering whether we could begin our conversation tonight by you helping us understand what kind of offences are they detained for? What is this minimum threshold of being detained under these national security laws?
All right. Thank you, Melissa, for your kind invitation. All right. So in the context of Malaysia, so actually we do have several laws that govern security offences. All right. Of course, we know mainly SOSMA, right, because it's clearly govern security offences. Okay. Apart from that, we have another two set. I mean, the law, which is POCA and POTA, which also been used by the authorities to deal with security-related suspects, offenders. But the different thing is, these POCA, Prevention of Criminal Act, and also POTA, Prevention of Terrorism Act, it is somehow outside criminal justice system, because it provides executive measure, detention without trial, if I may regard it as that. It's something like we have ISA in the past, mm-hmm. all right, where the suspect will be detained for a period like 2 years, not exceeding 2 years, and that is the period can be renewable from time to time based on the necessity. It will not, those suspects won't be brought to the court.
Right.
So, so mainly most of them will be, we will have, if for POTA, for example, for POTA detainee, they will have some sort of rehabilitation program, they call it. It's purely under POTA, right? Under KDN, under Home Ministry. So that is one approach, one mechanism that the authorities use. Another one is through SOSMA. SOSMA is, SOSMA embodies some sort of criminal justice approach where the suspect of security offences will be arrested in accordance with SOSMA, right? So the period of investigation period would be like the maximum would be 28 days, right? As compared to the usual criminal process would be, the maximum would be 14 days.
Right.
After that, they will be brought to the court. If the prosecution, if the deputy public prosecutor or the PP decided there is strong case against them, so they will be brought to the court for trial. So they will be charged, and if they plead guilty, of course, they will sentence. In terms of the offence, all right, if you look at SOSMA itself, SOSMA will govern what they define as security offences. What are security offences? If you look at it, you have to cross-refer to the penal code because SOSMA does not create any offences. It's based on penal code.
Understood. So, sorry to interrupt you, if I may. With Project Integrate, right, the idea is to allow these former security detainees a second chance at reintegration in society. But the question is, why should society allow the reintegration of former security? Are they the radical extremists that that proved to be a danger to society. Is that what society has been worried about?
Okay, so like any other criminal or convicts, of course, usually at the end of the day, they will go back to the society. All right, and here first, of course, the principle would be first you want to make sure that no risk coming from them later. Another one, giving their second chance, it actually serves the public interest as well. The public, of course, would benefit more if these people, you know, change their life and being able to contribute later to the society. So we have that those convicts from the SOSMA, as well as those former detainees from Boka and Bota. And of course, like any other criminal offenders or convicts or convicted person, there usually will be stigma, right? Societal stigma coming imposed on them. Of course, this is legit. Of course, you know, when someone doing something, the society feel that, these people can be, as you said, can we give the second chance to them? Of course, it is subject to how first, what are the offenses, I mean, they have committed, and also how, because during when they're serving their sentence, as well as during the rehabilitation process, of course, we hope that they have, you know, some sort of rehabilitated, in a sense, reform, I would say. So, of course, these people, we must make sure that they can be, they are able to reintegrate back to the society, or otherwise, they go back to the society. If the society reject them, where do you think they will go? Of course, go to where, you know, they familiar with, and so we don't want to repeat the same things that they have done before. So, if we to compare with the ordinary criminals and compare with the security detainees, former security detainees, of course, stigma is, I would say, is bigger or greater than the usual ordinary crime. Number two is also the somehow what we call as overemphasis on security somehow may not facilitate these individual to reintegrate in the society. In the sense that, for example, some people may tolerate that, you just being convicted for theft, simple theft or something. But when they heard about, oh no, this is security-related offenses, this must be huge, I don't want to associate myself here. So that's, of course, for example, for the employer, when they got something like, oh, okay, you have been judged under SOSMA. No, it's a big no for us. So this is overemphasis on security somehow. That's why we need a very specific reintegration program for this FSD.
What would make a good reintegration program?
All right. If we are talking about the structure or the content, of course, the usual common principle, we do the same as reintegration program for the usual criminal. But the thing is, somehow we need to take extra step a bit. First, to make sure they will be with us. I mean, they will join the integration program because at present, of course, there is no law to make sure that they come and after they've been released and they come to us back. No, it is purely, you know, first, we don't have a very coordinated reintegration program in place right now. Number two, we cannot make sure that they come back to us or so that the reason being is like this. For those who have been detained under security offenses, do you think that they will come back to the authorities after they have been released? Mm. Of course, there will be some sort of personal issues, all right?
Because distrust. There's a distrust to authorities.
Yes. At this juncture, we need what? We need someone or a party which is a bit neutral, community perhaps, all right, or some organization. CSOs, for example, that they can trust, all right? Mm-hmm. So, because at the moment, if you look at the current arrangement of the reintegration program, very basic, very ad hoc, it's purely right. Based on department. So, for example, for SOSMA detainees, some of us, there is a brief program by the police. But of course, do you think they will go to the police to, to get help after they have been detained?
That's a valid point. I take your point. I think that CSOs can play the honest broker role. They can provide more scrutiny to what has been a very state-centric approach to security issues. But Dr. Mukris, the question is, Project Integrate, for instance, which is a multi-stakeholder project, does that get the buy-in and the support of government, of the Home Ministry, of the prison department, the special branch? I'm thinking of all the different components that want to be territorial over national security issues. Would they open up and allow for a democratic approach to reintegration of former security detainees?
All right. Of course, that is a very huge challenge that we have to come up with a very inclusive community-based program. But the thing is, that is how even in criminal justice system now, even that is the approach that we are going to. All right, we are going for more community-based community policings. That is the trend, and I think that would usually more effective as compared to the conventional, traditional one that we have. Of course, in order to make sure that everyone, because we cannot blame the police if they don't want, because they have you know, tasks, their own tasks, their purpose. But at the same time, if they manage to get together with reintegration program, at the same time, they may get, you know, some sort of monitoring mechanism as well. They have some benefit from that as well. So as it goes the same with prison. They don't want to get the same client, you know, from
time again. To time. Okay, that's a good point. Right. All right.
So now the thing is, what we need is a clear policy that of course that must be coming from the government, right? Because you can get some allocation in terms of resources as well, which extremely important. Right. And at the same time, if you have this kind of policy in place, at the same time you may able to invite more from private sectors as well, because they know where to, you know, to help you
Dr. Mukris, unfortunately I have to interrupt you and tell you that we've run out of time, but I appreciate your time spending with us. Dr. Mukris Matros from UUM, they're wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.